With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is a podcast that seeks justice. Justice for the lives stolen by those in society that hide amongst us every day. Hidden in our towns, cities, and countrysides, the places that we work, and sometimes in our very own homes. This is Hidden Killers.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for joining us today on the program. Some psychological insight into the Koberger case with psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott. Welcome, Siobhan, and thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you here. I want to get your insight into what has happened. Over the last week, we learned about some of the disciplinary actions that were being taken against Brian Koberger in Pullman, where he was an assistant professor at that time. And within 24 hours of one of those sit-downs, these murders happened to occur. Knowing what we know about the alleged stalking behavior that he was doing of the house of the girls where they were living on King Road, and the combination now of the professional rejection, if you will, how does that play together? Does that play together in this case?
Well, I definitely, what we know about serial killers, which this is that type of, you know, sexual domination, serial killing, it's just the classic MO. So what we know about that is they're acting on fantasies that they've been entertaining for years. So of course, he had the history of stalking these girls, you know, the messages to Instagram. So certainly, he had been planning this and thinking about it for months, if not for years, you know, to some degree. But there could have been an environmental trigger that did push him over the edge to do it at that night, you know, something that sort of amplified his anger. And it might have happened eventually, but it might have been in a week, it might have been in a month. And so very often there are those environmental triggers that can just be the little thing that amplified it. But I think he had been ready to do this anyway.
But let me go to this. What could explain the behavior of the suspect as indicated by his movements and actions on the night of the murders, including his effort to conceal his location, the fact that his phone pinged cell towers in the area of the crime scene? And he had done this at least 12 times prior to the murders as well. What's going through his mind where he knows he needs to turn it off then, but he didn't do it any other time when he was near this location?
Yeah, it kind of sounds like someone who thinks they're being sophisticated by turning it off during the murders, but they're a little grandiose, you know, they're not realizing that they're going to be looked at more carefully. And I think in order to pull something off like this, which is what we know about the personality of this kind of person, they're grandiose anyway. They think they're going to get away with it. They don't intend to get caught. And they enjoy this little cat and mouse game, you know, with law enforcement. And I think he thought he was smarter than he actually was. Because, of course, what we know, they're going to look at more than just what happened that night. But I think in his mind, he thought, okay, if I do this, that'll cover it. And it was overconfidence, which is usually what gets them caught. They're overconfident.
Sure. Based on the evidence of the DNA sample from the knife sheath found near one of the victim's bodies matches Brian Koberger's biological father, can you speculate on the role of genetics and family history in his behavior? Not just the fact that they're linked by DNA, but family history and maybe family behavior as well.
Yeah, you know, that is the fascinating area of research. And we've learned so much just in the past decade about DNA and genetics. You know, personality has a tremendous amount to do with a person like this. There are traits that they're born with. The trait of psychopathy, which means they don't have empathy for other people. They can be intelligent but highly manipulative, and they have the ability to pretend, to basically wear the mask of sanity. People don't realize that they're psychopathic. So this is 67% heritable. Mm-hmm. So it does tend to run in families. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone with these genetics is going to be a criminal, because some people become attorneys and surgeons who have a higher rate of this, you know, this genetic DNA, mm-hmm. but they turn it, they channel it, and they have developed a braking system so they can put the brakes on their worst impulses. Well, other people with this DNA do not. They become more thrill seeking. And maybe it's things that happen there in their environment that feed their anger more, you know, and this could be where his history of being bullied plays in. You know, he became more angry. So I think you can definitely say that there's a genetic component with this. It's highly heritable. And so there are likely people in his genetic family tree, perhaps not parents, but perhaps grandparents, who had these similar qualities, but perhaps they had a better braking capacity, so they never broke the law. But very often you do find, if you go back in the family tree, a history of people who've been a bit different.
And that's an interesting thing. One of the things I think, if I were one of the victim's families, you'd really want the perpetrator, if it is Koberger, to feel and understand the depths of the pain that he has put them through by stealing their loved ones, wanting to see that in court, wanting to see some sort of recognition for what was done. Thus far, every time we've seen Koberger, he looks, you know, almost kind of professional, very just to the point, and I'm here and I'm going to say this, yes, no, and get in and out, not really showing much emotion at all. Is this type of a character, like once we do see him in court, the type that will ever be able to recognize the depths of what they've done? Like, they may understand that, yes, I murdered people, but are they incapable of feeling the sadness, the depravity, the guilt for a crime like this?
Yes, you absolutely nailed it, because this person is so fundamentally different in their personality structure. They do not have that ability. They just don't. Now, they can mimic it. They can learn the right things to say. I rewatched recently the sentencing for the Golden State Killer, where the victim impact statements were read in California. Mm-hmm. And he stood there, he listened to everybody's statement. He got up and he said, "I just want everyone to know I listened to your stories and I'm truly sorry." It's like, that is about as deep as, you know, a grain of sand. There's sure. just not any real depth to that. They know that that's what they're supposed to say, because, of course, they would like to be looked upon favorably. It's in their own best interest at this point to appear sorry. But there's just a missing piece in a person like this. And because they took pleasure in these fantasies of murder for years, if not decades, for some people, this is not something that they truly have the capacity to feel sorry for doing. In fact, often when they hear people talk about their suffering, it also reminds me of the Parkland, Florida shooter, who had written very clearly, "I enjoy watching the family suffer." So there's almost a perverse flip side, that is the person sitting there secretly feeling a sense of pleasure witnessing other people's sadness.
A lot of questions have been raised, including many by myself, about the families in these sort of situations, the families of the killers. And I don't know much about this family at all. I don't think many people do. But theoretically speaking here, the question comes up, how did they not notice anything was off about their son? And maybe they did notice some things were off, but let's say the genetics of this here, is it more difficult to identify someone who has kind of off behavior if maybe you do as well. Not necessarily to the point of you're going to go murder someone, but if the norm and the whole family kind of thinks in this whole different way because of their DNA and their genetics, and this is how they're programmed, is it more difficult then to identify a son or a daughter or anyone that would have some serious red flags to the rest of society that doesn't think in those same ways?
Yeah, that's an incredibly good question, because if I were to make a guess, and again, I'm only guessing, Koberger's parents are probably not behaving in any kind of psychopathic way. They're probably not criminals from anything that we've seen thus far. There's no indication of that. They may have been the kind of people that were polite to their neighbors and tried to do a good job as parents. But there may have been a bit of a social disconnection. You know, maybe they didn't do, or at least one of them didn't do, deep friendships, deep, meaningful relationships with other people. And that is common in psychopathic people. So maybe if they had a child who was withdrawn and didn't do deep connections with other people and was bullied and then became a bully, they may not have noticed, or they may not have taken it as seriously, because perhaps that is more normal in their family.
Or one, as a parent, could simply say, well, I was the same way too when I was that age.
Yes.
And I'm not, you know, if you're not a killer, you're not necessarily seeing any red flags. You're just like, well, you know, you're kind of socially awkward. I get it.
Exactly. Socially awkward would have been my guess. And that, you know, a parent perhaps growing up was also socially awkward. And so they just sort of normalize it. And maybe this would have been a kid that, if he had gotten into therapy with somebody who was really good with kids at age 7 or 8, you know, during the times he was unhappy or being bullied, they might have been able to steer him in a different direction, and he might have never been quite like the rest of us, but he might not have gone down the path he did. But it's very true. Parents often don't realize the depth of the problem the kid is having.
Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, thank you so much for your insight. Always very much appreciated. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any of the updates and discussions that we're having for you right here. Do greatly appreciate that. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod. Until next time, for all of us here, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.